This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hi, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. It's SB Nation AM. Josh Edwards set to join us from CBS Sports, and we'll talk to him about the Combine that's going on in Indianapolis that is coming up. That actually starts Thursday. We had teams speaking yesterday. Brought up the story earlier about Matt Rhule and the Carolina Panthers. They don't know where they're going with Cam Newton. It's a really, really tough position for the Panthers to be in. Yes, Cam Newton is a former MVP. Yes, he's a veteran in this league. Yes, he has shown he can play in this league, which, be honest with you, is half the battle between some of these guys. I mean, you get all of these excited about a young player coming out of the draft. He's got all these tools. You can't wait till he gets out there. And then 3 years later, you're like, oh, wow, I didn't notice he was on the set of the College Football Today on ESPN 7 because he didn't quite make it in the NFL. But you know Cam Newton can play when he's healthy. You know he can win you some games when he's healthy. The caveat is he healthy? So you've got this organization, as we were saying earlier, like it's built on analytics, right? It's all built on how do we process the numbers? How do we use the numbers? How do we use the salary in the right way? How do we build this around the idea of what Dave Tepper wants, the owner, at the top all the way down? Does Cam Newton fit in there with all of these variables? And if he doesn't, what do you do if you're Matt Rhule and you have this quarterback vacancy? It's either Cam Newton is healthy, Cam Newton is not healthy, but he's still on the roster, or Cam Newton has to be traded and we have to find a willing partner to do that. Those are the three scenarios, and that's tough to be in when you are kind of going into the draft, when you're kind of talking to your team about you talking about your team and how you want to build your team, because there's uncertainty at the most important position in all of sports. You just don't know what you're going to get from Cam Newton when he's healthy, and you don't know if he's tradable when he can finally throw. And what does that look like? And who are the interested parties? And then when he's on the roster, are you limited in what you can do because you have to keep it's there's so many variables here. But, you know, Joe Burrow did speak at the Combine. He did say he was going to play for Cincinnati if Cincinnati drafts him. We also heard Tua Tagovailoa, who is not working out, recovering from the hip injury. He talked about his progression into this next level. You know, this is where you're going to start to hear about these players, and then it's showtime in the next couple of days about the workouts. How much does it matter? How much does it not matter? Stocks that rise and fall in the Combine. Again, Josh Edwards is going to come up in about 35 minutes, and we'll hit that up. Coming up, some really, really tough news for the Yankees as they get ready for the upcoming season.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM, and on Twitter, you can hit us up at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's, please. The Yankees got some bad news yesterday. Pitcher Luis Severino is going to miss the entire 2020 season. He needs Tommy John surgery.
Oof.
Yeah, oof is right.
Two of the scariest words for any pitcher.
Right, because you don't know how they're going to come respond to that. Now, here's the thing with the Yankees, right? They signed Gerrit Cole, so you're thinking, They had so many injuries last year. They had 30 different players at some point be injured or out of the lineup due to various injuries.
Severino was one of them, right?
And Severino was one of them, exactly. But they still won 103 games and won the division. So look, on the surface, you could say, well, look, they've done this before. They know how to fill the holes. They still have Gerrit Cole. They still have Masahiro Tanaka. You know, it's not like the pitching staff, the whole rotation is going to go down, but their 2 and 3 pitchers, Severino and James Paxton, are going to be out. Paxton is out with a back injury. Domingo Germán got a suspension for domestic violence. He was just taken through the press woodshed over this. So the Yankees have no idea until June as to what their rotation is going to look like. Now, Severino is obviously out. Cole is still in. You got Masahiro Tanaka. You get James Paxton back, but he's not a durable pitcher. Right. So this is not somebody that's going to come back and be, you know, aces for you. This might be a guy that struggles in terms of getting his rhythm coming back from a back injury. Now, look, do I think the Yankees are still going to be okay? Yes. But Pitching is the one caveat in baseball that can destroy you. It's the one thing that can kill you. It doesn't matter if you hit home runs and winning. You can't win every game 8-9, right? Like you can't, you know, 9-8, I should say. You can't win every game like that. You're going to need a rotation that is consistent. Now, you'll get your outing from Gerrit Cole, and Masahiro Tanaka is going to win you some games. But if you go to Jordan Montgomery, or you got to go find, you know, somebody else, maybe some other young guy that's going to fill this gap until James Paxton comes back, and you get Domingo Germán back, well, that could be a problem for the Yankees. They could find themselves trailing the Rays. I could totally see by the All-Star break the Yankees trailing by two or three games in the division. And then we'll see. I don't think it's the end of the world for the Yankees, but this isn't good news. And, you know, Severino's been toying with an injured elbow for a while. This is now the answer. And the Yankees did change up their medical staff to sort of, you know, to sort of be a little bit less conservative on these things because they felt like the conservative nature of their team last year in terms of, all right, well, we'll wait and see and then we'll come, that might have hurt them. But now they've lost Severino for the entire season. So, again, I still think they're the favorites to win the division, but, you know, you never know. And what if Gerrit Cole, here's the other thing people aren't saying. Because these players aren't machines. What if Gerrit Cole doesn't pitch well in New York? What if for whatever reason it just doesn't suit him? It just doesn't fit him. I mean, maybe Houston was just a perfect place, a perfect organization, perfect setup, and he just was very comfortable there. What if at Yankee Stadium he just doesn't like it? Right? It's not the first time that that's happened, where a pitcher has gone to a new location is just never quite the same pitcher. Maybe,
reverts back to Pittsburgh Pirate Gerrit Cole?
Yeah, well, maybe a little less than the super ace that he was for the Astros last year, right? Because that's really hard to replicate. So you never know. But this is another they're lucky, though. Think about this. They're lucky that the Red Sox are going to be considered going into a down year. Right?
Yeah.
Because if the Red Sox were really strong and the Rays are good, the Rays went to the playoffs last year, this could be a tough situation for the Yankees. This could be like, well, we're fighting a little more than we probably want in the division.
Yeah, and speaking of the Red Sox, too, I mean, we still don't know what their fate is.
No, we still have no idea.
I mean, that's supposed to come, supposed to come next week.
That's right. Yeah. We still got to wait on that.
We don't know what's going to happen with them. I mean, are more people? I mean, it seems like they've been taking a lot longer with the Red Sox than they are with the Astros.
Yeah, yeah. There's two things that could be happening here. One, the investigation of the Red Sox could have taken longer, and it may be a little bit more detailed, and maybe they're not getting as much response as they originally had gotten from the Astros. Or two, it's possible that they're waiting. They're timing this out to go, look, we're getting our tails kicked in the press over the Astros. They're getting booed everywhere they go in spring training. You know, it's a PR nightmare. If I add the Red Sox onto this pile, I don't know what we're going to do.
Turning in my key card.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty much what Rob Manfred's probably thinking right now. It's
exactly.
At this point, it's like, I'm calling HR. I'm putting my 2 weeks in.
I know, right? It's just, I mean, because if you add on the Red Sox into this, people might do it anyway with the Red Sox. They may not need an investigation out anything with Boston.
But it's funny because the Red Sox people don't handle it because that's how they get treated every time they go to New York.
Sure,
30, 50 times a year. It seems like those two teams always just play each other.
But I said this either earlier this week or late last week. The problem that I have with this whole Astros thing is, my God, they went from a very likable team to the villains of baseball, and they're not built to be villains of baseball.
No.
Those players are not built like when you join the Yankees, you know what's coming, right? You know, they're the evil empire and all those other, you know, euphemisms that they've been called over the decades. You get it. You understand. You know, Johnny Damon knew what he was doing when he signed with Boston, right? I mean, he knew when he went to Boston. He knew what he was doing. But the Astros are not like that. The players on the Astros are not like that. They don't have the image of villains. The town isn't a villainous town, right? It's not. There's never been a Houston versus the world. If anything, Houston's a great place. It's a great city. It's a fan, you know, and it's got really likable athletes in that city and has had likable athletes in the city. From Hakeem Olajuwon with the Rockets, I mean, you know, through that organization to when they were winning titles in the 90s to, you know, J.J. Watt, I mean, to, you know, Astros players of the past. you know, go back to, you know, go back to Craig Biggio. He's a very likable player, right? I mean, and personifies the Astros. He's a very likable player around the nation. You know, this Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, George Springer, those guys were likable guys around the country. And now they're painted as this really bad organization and this really bad team with very bad motives, and they're just bad people. And it's hard for me to wrap my mind around it, because that's not how I view them. It's not how I see them.
Right. And, you know, take it a step further. I mean, I'll look at it this way, too, with Gerrit Cole. I'm just wondering if Gerrit Cole knew the writing on the wall.
It's possible, yeah.
If he goes, well, you know, Astros are new villains, Yankees are old villains. I'll take the old villain
I'll take the old villain role, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know what's going on here. This is coming back to bite us.
Yep.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Although he came out yesterday, I think it was yesterday or the day before, saying that, you know, everything they did was totally clean.
Yeah,
they didn't do anything in 2018 or 19. And I
can't speak for Yankee fans, but this is one of the reasons I think that when you talk to Yankee fans who really have followed the team for their whole lives and, you know, have gone through went through the 80s where it was, you know, bad, not very good baseball, except for a couple of years. They weren't too bad, but they didn't make the playoffs after going to the World Series in 81. The early 90s, not 94, but like 90, 91, when they were really atrocious. That's one of their favorite championship teams is the 96 team, because it was one of the first times that the nation didn't dislike them as an organization. They were a good group of guys. I mean, look, maybe people still probably rooted against them, and but the Braves were the team that kind of had the dominance of Major League Baseball in 96. They were the defending champions. They were loaded. Their pitching staff was unbelievable, right? You know, and it's not that the Braves were villains. It's just that the Yankees were a serious underdog. Maybe the only other time in 2001 with the attacks on the World Trade Center.
Yeah, I was going to say with the Yankees, for the first time ever, this wasn't your father's Yankees.
Right, it was different.
That was the feeling you got. It was a different team. This isn't your father's Yankees. This Yankees team did it differently.
Yeah, and it's funny because the stars of those teams that people remember are like Bernie Williams, right, who came up, and Derek Jeter, right, who came up. But the team did have Jimmy Key, who they got from Toronto. Yeah. The team had David Cone still. The team had Kenny Rogers. Not yet.
Yeah.
Wade Boggs played third base in the twilight of his career, right? I mean, they still had a number of guys on that team that they did pick up. John Wetland. But it was still a team that you sort of went, yeah, they were bringing Yankee baseball back, but they were not this high priced loaded team.
All those guys you mentioned, none of them are overpaid.
Right,
hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. That it was like, oh, what, this guy wants a 10-year, $250 million contract? No problem. We'll give it to him.
And it wasn't success piled on success, right? It wasn't like the Yankees were doing that, like, well, you know, we won in 92 and 93 and then the strike year 94. Like, the 94 team was really good, but we'll never know because we didn't have a series. And then the 95 team made the playoffs, but blew a 2-0 lead to the Mariners. So they lost three straight games in the wild card. That was Don Mattingly's final year. Never got to the World Series in all of his years playing for the Yankees. But they were not as disliked. Then 98 came and they won every game they played practically. And, you know, then it was all different. They had Clemens and it was a little bit different, but, you know, Andy Pettit, Derek Jeter. I mean, the young players on that 90 team were very likable.
The foursome. Those two,
Mariano Rivera
and Jorge Posada.
And Mariano Rivera was pitching in the eighth inning because Wetland was their closer.
Yeah, he
wasn't even the closer yet. And so there was just this, you know, likable group. And that's kind of, you look, it's again, going back to the Astros, that's been my issue.
Well, that's who they've been.
Right? That is a likable team. I remember saying this. Look, I know people thought that because during the World Series in October, I was like, look, the Nationals have this really cool story, right? Because we talked about their record. What was it? 19-31 or whatever it was at one point. And they turned the season around and, you know, they went through the wild card system and they, you know, went to the World Series. And, you know, did they have a better story than Houston, who had already won the World Series? Sure. But I don't think America was rooting actively against the Astros at that time. I think it was a fine World Series. The road team was winning every game. Right? Either champion was worthy of the title and sit back and enjoy. I don't think there was any animosity towards the Astros because maybe the Nationals had a better story. So it's hard. Again, it's hard for me to sort of I'm not going to look at Jose Altuve, despite all the rumors about a buzzer in his jersey. I'm not going to look at him with anything other than real appreciation for the guy's career. I'm not going to look at Alex Bregman. I mean, it may take a while, but it's hard for me to put them in that evil category that we put some teams in sometimes in sports. I just can't do it yet. Maybe after a while I'll go, yeah, I really hated all that, but it's hard because I like Altuve a lot. I really do. I really like it. I thought it was so cool the next day after Altuve hit that home run, the next day J.J. Watt went into NRG Stadium with an Altuve jersey on and he was pointing to it as he walked by the cameras. I thought that is some city camaraderie. That's some city brotherhood that I just appreciate from the outside looking in. I've always liked the relationship between those two guys. When when Altuve gave them that bottle, that championship bottle of alcohol, whatever it was, what was it that he gave? As a gift to J.J. Watt. Said, you're just as part of this as we are. You know, it's because you're part of the city. God. What you've done for the city, you know, what you've done for the city for Harvey, what we've done for the city of Harvey, it's one. We're together.
Well, I was one of the pair of them were sportsmen of the year.
Sportsmen of the year, right, right. And I just, listen, from a guy that doesn't live in Houston but knows a lot of you in Houston, I appreciated that. I still, it warms my heart to have seen that. So it's hard for me to sort of make that transition. So weird. All right, coming up, again, we're going to be chatting with Josh Edwards, CBS Sports, on the Kind Bond. But coming up, that MLS question that I'm going to give Ron on its 25th anniversary. Next.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, have a car problem but don't know where to go? Because maybe you're not close to home when your car breaks down. You ever think about that? Let O'Reilly Auto Parts help with O'Reilly Auto Parts' shop referral program. Take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click Find a Repair Shop to find a reputable repair facility or service center for your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Major League Soccer is heading into its 25th season. I got to be honest with you, that's impressive. I'm sorry, that's impressive. Startup leagues have a hard time finding a niche. And soccer, 25 years ago, if you would have said, this ain't going to make it 25 years, you probably would have been secure thinking that that was going to happen. 25 years later, think about where this league is. It is now in soccer stadiums, their own soccer stadiums. Forget playing in football stadiums that hold 90,000 people or 80,000 people or whatever. They're in their own places now. There is aggressive expansion, not aggressive to the standpoint of we're going to put 10 more teams in the league. I mean, I'm talking about cities fighting to get this. I know living in Nashville, this city was hell-bent on getting a team. I mean, they fought everything they could to get a team. And then they finally got one, and now there's arguments about where they're going to play and where they're going to build their future stadium. But it was celebrated. There was a big deal. It was a big event when Nashville was announced that it was an expansion city. But if you go back 25 years ago, you would have won a lot of bets if you told people in 2020 that this is where the league was going in. It was not popular. It did not look like it was going to be popular. But I've said this all along, and I know Ron and I, you and I have had some fun with soccer going back and forth. But I do think the days of this country don't care about soccer, I think those people are few and far between. I think those people are that mindset is dying out.
Well, of course it is, Tony.
It's not
always known this.
We're a football nation. Don't get me wrong. We're a football nation. You don't need one or the other. But MLS, and I'm bringing you, I want your thoughts on this from a soccer guy. 25 years, we've seen it make progress. Is the progress not enough? Is the progress just right? Is the progress more than expected? 25 years in, it's a long time. 25 years is a long time.
No, 25 years is a long time. I'm looking at it this way. Like when it first came out, what was it, 8 teams?
Yeah.
And now we're getting ready to do, I think we're on 26.
That's amazing. That really is amazing.
And I mean, that's really what it boils down to is that it was 8 teams. And like you said, you know, soccer style stadiums. I mean, that's kind of how we refer to it. I think the only soccer style stadium that first came about was the Columbus Crew.
Yeah, I think you're right.
They were the first one, and at first you were looking at like, oh my God, you know, it's only 25,000, 26,000 seat stadium. The MLS will never survive that. And then you started seeing, like, no, that's exactly what the MLS needs. The MLS needs is 25,000 to 30,000 seat stadiums. It's right in their revenue share. I mean, that's how that will potentially make them the most money. They're not paying rent on a gigantic 70,000 seat stadium or worrying about the optics. I think if you always play it in a 70,000 seat stadium and you see that it's empty, there's going to be disinterest then.
I'll never forget when I was covering the Rapids. I'll never forget one game in particular. There was a Thursday night NFL preseason game for the Broncos, and they were playing and it was raining. And so they were playing this preseason game in the rain, and the sidelines of both the Broncos and the team that they were playing were pretty much wrecked by the standing of the players who were in the cleats, and it was muddy and whatnot. And by the time we got to the MLS game that weekend, I was part of the pregame and postgame crew, you could see the field was just a disaster, right? They couldn't fix it. You know, so you'd have the regulation soccer field that's wider than the football field, and you'd have this straight patch of just dirt, and just, it was awful. And I remember we were kind of discussing, the guy that I did the broadcast with, he's really a soccer guy and he really knew about the sport. And I remember saying, all right, what is, you know, look at that area. It's muddy, it's slippery and whatnot. He goes, yeah, watch the strategy. It's changing. They're not using those areas. They've actually shrunk the field a bit. And I remember thinking that was too bad, that the playing surface changed because of a preseason game that they couldn't control. So now they're trying to play a game in which their strategy had to be altered because another sport, the sport that was really using the stadium, had kind of wrecked the field for them. And then so when they built a Dick's Sporting Good Park in Commerce City, I thought, well, now we won't have this problem. Now they control the turf. They control the field. They control the pitch. And so that's a big boost for a league 25 years in. This league is as where it is in the world. It's not comparable to the Premier League or anything,
Nothing in Europe.
Well, that's okay, but where is it?
It'll never be. I would say, I mean, it's still on the growing pattern, but it might be almost as comparable, say, as like the, you don't know, any of our brethren who are listening down south right now will probably argue and say pshaw at me, but I would say it's comparable to where the Mexican League is.
Okay. Now, is that good for 25 years in, or is that needs to get better?
No, I think that is good. You know, I think the rise, I mean, we joke about it all the time that you have these aging European stars who come over here to, play in the MLS to grab a couple more years. You know, we laugh about the MLS being a retirement league, but I think it's actually really helped out because anyone who's a soccer fan, you know, we pay more attention to European soccer. That's the highest quality of soccer. But then as soon as you have someone like, even Ronaldo was joked about, or not joked, but has made comments about coming to the MLS. And if he came to the MLS, I mean, you saw the scene attendance rise. He's playing like Ronaldo of, you know, today. Because the skill set is a lot different. He can be that player again.
Yeah, sure. And it's not only is it a good place for older players from Europe and South America to come and play, but you expand your brand a little bit.
I think
a lot of economic opportunities, even more than what you've been getting before, just to pile on the cash that you've been collecting all, you know, your whole career.
Right. And I don't want to get ahead of myself here, but I want to say that I think the MLS has eclipsed South American soccer.
Okay.
I mean, I know South American soccer is huge in South America, but there's a reason why they don't really, none of their stars stay there.
Yeah.
And it's because they, you know, the South American players, especially the good ones who are on the national teams, they can chase a heftier paycheck going to Europe.
As it's been pointed out to me on Twitter, I mean, look, the Atlanta United plays in front of a huge crowd at Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah.
Huge crowd. I mean, that's impressive from an attendance standpoint.
Put it this way, okay, the average attendance in 1996, when it first came out, 17,406. That was right. The average attendance across the entire landscape. They played mainly in stadiums. You know, only the San Jose Earthquakes played in a small stadium that sat 30,000. But, you know, you're looking at the Metro Stars played in the Giants Stadium. DC United played in RFK Memorial Stadium. They're playing in huge stadiums. Columbus Crew played in Ohio Stadium. You know, seats 102,000 people. They're never going to fill that. And then you fast forward to now. You know, there was a little dip. You know, a few years after, it's like the new car smell kind of wore off. But it's been steadily increasing year after year after year. And they're now, you know, their average attendance is about 21,000, 22,000 people.
Yeah. And one of the local media groups here in Nashville did a poll and said, would you go to a game? Not whether you could afford tickets or not, just whether you would go to a game. It was resounding yes. It was like in the 80%.
Why not?
Of people who said, of course I'd go. Like, that's, you know, that's pretty amazing. SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Nation AM, as we continue along, it's NFL Combine Week in Indianapolis. Josh Edwards joins us from CBS Sports to give us the lowdown on what we expect this week and what's already been talked about so far. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. All right, Josh, let's get to Joe Burrow real quick. He did say if the Bengals drafted him, he would go there. Was there some real sort of substance behind that story? Was that just a fabrication? Were people plucking a few quotes here and there to sort of try to create a story? I mean, in terms of his answer, was he answering a legitimate question?
Yeah, I think fabrication is a good word for that. I think it was manufactured a little bit in the sense that, you know, it was blown out of proportion. I don't think, you know, he may have considered his options, but I don't think he ever got to the point where he was thinking, I'm not going to go to the Bengals. You know, I'm from the state of Ohio. I went to Ohio State. I've got a lot of fans that were just naturally going to be gravitating towards Cincinnati, and I don't want to play there. That line of thought just didn't make a ton of sense, even with the kind of shape that their franchise is in. But as far as how he answered the question yesterday, he answered it really confident, which is what you can kind of come to expect from Joe Burrow, because he's a very, very confident guy. I mean, he's got a little bit of a different swagger to his game. Passed him in the hallway this morning, actually, and he already looked like he was upset. So I don't know what he had for breakfast, but it was apparently something that did not sit well. But he's a guy that has a lot of confidence and really carries a chip on his shoulder.
What is this week? I mean, we've been seeing this get more and more exposure and more now it's in, you know, there's some prime time moments now. It's kind of a popular ratings thing, but in the end, there's the business side of it and there's the entertainment side of it. We talk about this with the draft. Yep. The business of the NFL is picking players, but the entertainment of it is to provide fans an opportunity to watch it. But what is the business of this? Is it still an important event for guys to go to and to be seen and to do these drills?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, there's definitely some business to it in terms of the new primetime format. It's built for the viewers. You know, the popular events like the 40-yard dash, the vertical jump, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, there is still a lot of evaluation that occurs here. You kind of want to validate that certain players are the size, the height that they say they are. You want to see how explosive they are. Just for a specific example, when you look at pass rushers, you want to see a sub-7-second three-cone drill, because that kind of measures your agility. It measures your explosiveness. So that's one of those drills that you can kind of take a lot out of. The 40-yard dash is obviously not going to be important for every position, specifically, you know, the offensive line, because they're not asked to run 40 yards downfield. But there is still some stuff that you can take from each particular drill.
From the standpoint of classes, like a position, some years we say this is a great quarterback class in terms of watching. What is it in 2020? What is the position that's catching the buzz and catching the attention?
Wide receivers getting all the attention. I mean, Les Snead, the Rams general manager, Thomas Dimitroff, the Falcons general manager, both of those guys were talking about the wide receiver position, and I don't know that either one of them really needs a wide receiver. So that's the kind of buzz that has reached every level of the NFL world to this point. We're expecting 5, maybe 6 wide receivers in the first round. You know, I've seen crazy numbers like possibly 20 in the first 3 rounds, which is kind of absurd when you look at what we've seen in the past, but it is a really deep class. Now, one group that doesn't get talked about enough is offensive tackle. Everybody's familiar with, you know, Jedrick Wills from Alabama, Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, Mekhi Becton from Louisville. And somebody else I'm forgetting too. Oh, Andrew Thomas from Georgia. But it's a deep class as well. You're talking about Ben Bartsch from St. John's. You know, Ezra Cleveland from Boise State. You've got Josh Jones from Houston. Austin Jackson from USC. I mean, it's a deep class. So when you look around the NFL, it's kind of been bereft of talent at that position in recent years. So the influx of talent in this year's class is going to be met with welcomed arms because everybody's looking for an offensive tackle, possibly two, as it relates to like the Giants and the Browns. So those are the two positions that I would say are probably deepest and could really have some solid runs here in the first round.
Can you go in a good combine workout at one of the higher skill positions, quarterback or running back or wide receiver? Can you go from evaluated from as a second, third round guy? Can you go to a first round based on just combine?
I don't know if you can make that substantial of a jump because at the end of the day, the bulk of your evaluation is going to be the film. So what you show on film is typically what talent evaluators are going to expect from you, you know, as a player, but there is some benefit to each of these positions because you're talking about a guy like Henry Ruggs that could possibly run a sub-4.2. I don't think that's likely, but he seems to think it's possible. So if he's going to run a sub-4.2, I mean, you can't ignore the kind of buzz that he's going to receive. And then, you know, in the rounds that you're referring to, you know, those day two rounds, I think there are some guys that, you know, maybe they're grouped in a cluster with some other players, and that allows teams to kind of differentiate between a couple of players. And maybe in that instance, you're able to move from a second or third round up to like late first or something like that.
Josh, this is also the week where the Players Association is going to be voting on the new CBA. What's the buzz in terms of if it's going to get passed? What are some issues with it or the talk about what is on the table? I know 17 games is on the table, the change of the playoff format, but there's a feeling like it's going to get passed or not?
I think it's heading in that direction. I think it passed an important step this morning with kind of getting the majority of the NFLPA to kind of pass it along to the players. And typically the NFLPA is, you know, the ones that are kind of advising the players. So if the NFLPA thinks it's a solid agreement, then, you know, I don't understand how the players would come to the decision that it's not in their best interest. So I think we are moving in that direction. As you noted, the 17-game season is obviously something that has received a lot of attention. The 7-8 team, you know, whatever, the 7-team playoff format has also received a lot of attention. It's going to be different, but at the end of the day, it's all based on money. I mean, that's essentially what it comes down to. So the NFL is willing to accommodate the players in certain areas so that they're able to kind of stick their hands deeper into this, you know, treasure trove of earnings.
Josh, and we're talking to Josh Edwards, CBS Sports. Chase Young is not going to work out. Joe Burrow isn't. Is there other players that should be working out that are deciding against it?
No, because this is kind of a unique year. We've actually seen more players say that they're not going to work out than previous years because this is a kind of new format. So agents are advising their clients to essentially sit this out, wait until your pro day so you can put on a better show because you don't want to be the guinea pig going through this new primetime format. They don't know how it's going to work out. Typically, they can advise, you know, this is what you need to do at this time. This is what you need to eat, all this kind of stuff. But with the new primetime format, it's kind of changed the schedule entirely. So agents are kind of going through this in like a research view because they're trying to figure out how to advise their clients in the future. They don't want their highly regarded clients this year to be the guinea pigs for that process. So we're seeing a lot of guys that would typically probably compete decide that they're not going to perform in drills. So that's kind of been one of the interesting, you know, products of this new schedule change.
Josh Edwards, CBS Sports on the Combine in Indianapolis. Great talking to you. Good catching up.
Absolutely, guys. Anytime.
Enjoy the week. All right. When we come back, Ron and I are going to discuss whether or not being in the primetime format is good for the Combine. That's next on SB Nation AM.
Hi, this is Mike Herzing. Let's Talk Wheels, an automotive tip brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For those of you that love road trips, I want to share something that might keep you a little safer. On the highway, folks, it's common to see the front seat passenger napping with the seat leaned way back. But most wouldn't do it if they knew how dangerous it was. You see, seat belts and airbags are designed to work with the passenger and driver sitting up. Because in an accident, you can slip under the seat belt and be ejected from the car or get thrown into the shoulder belt, both of which can cause serious or even fatal injuries. And the limber young girls that put their feet up on the dash aren't thinking that an airbag can go off, bend their legs back, and break their legs or even their hips. I saw this happen years ago and it was really bad. Since then, I recommend the back seat for a nap location. Seat belts save lives and airbags prevent some injuries, but you have to use them correctly. This is Mike Herzing from Let's Talk Wheels. We're brought to you by the great folks at Jeep. For more tips, go to letstalkwheels.com and be sure to subscribe to our new Let's Talk Wheels podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play.
How does the Jeep brand celebrate President's Day? By doing what we do best, adventure. Because in the land of the free, you're only truly tasting that freedom if you occasionally take the road less traveled. And you'll want to be in the Jeep Cherokee when you do. With available trail-rated 4x4 capability, this American classic's knack for handling rugged terrain is the reason why wherever a Jeep SUV leads, adventure follows. Now, if you're more about the freedom to be luxurious, the Jeep Grand Cherokee is for you. With available 8.4-inch Uconnect touchscreen and other features that put the presidential in President's Day. And if you're looking for adventure with a view, the Jeep Compass's available panoramic dual-pane sunroof is your window to all the vast splendor America has to offer. So whether it's the road less traveled or off-road completely, be free, be adventurous, and be sure to check out the Jeep President's Day event for awesome deals. Jeep is a registered trademark.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio is presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, we were just talking to Josh Edwards at CBS Sports from the Combine, and he bring, you know, it's in prime time now. They have taken this event and they have said, look, we, for whatever reason, guys, you love it. So we're going to make you try to, we're going to try to make you love it even more than you already do. We're going to put it in prime time. Okay, I know why they're in, it's in prime time. I get it. I understand why they do that. You know, why the NFL Network is going to put it on prime time. But the question is, should it be in prime time? Is this something we should be watching after work, settling down after dinner, guys running dashes and doing cone drills and things like, is that something we should be watching in prime time?
I can't wait to watch this in prime time while I'm on my third piece of pie.
I know, right? Well, I'm just sitting on the couch. Like, you know, it's like, honey, The Bachelor, we got a game show, we can watch a tape of this HBO thing, or we can watch guys doing drills. What do you want to do?
In their underwear.
In their underwear. Now, I know the counter argument is, listen, there were people, and I was one of them, that didn't think the NFL draft was a Thursday night primetime thing.
No,
I was wrong about that.
Honestly, the first thing I thought of was, okay, you know, let's compare it to the draft.
Right.
What the NFL kind of did, whether you like this or not, they turned the NFL draft into an award show.
They did. They did. You know, exactly right.
You have your nominees, basically. He goes up there. It's a big fanfare thing. You get the name called. I mean, the only thing they're missing is the envelope.
Whatever the NFL wants to do with the draft now, I'm all in. I'm all in. If you want to, put it on another planet, I don't care. Like, if you want to, I mean, send the players up by rocket ship. Whatever they've done, every decision that they've made to enhance the entertainment aspect of the draft has worked. It has been super successful. Seeing it firsthand in Nashville, I was blown away by the amount. Remember, before that draft, I said, gee, I don't know if Nashville is going to be as competitive with Philadelphia and Chicago and it's not a real NFL town. It's a football town. It's a college football town, but you know, is it a huge NFL town? It exceeded my expectations tenfold, right? So whatever they want to do with the draft going forward, I couldn't care less. I will back it up. And I think this thing is in the same way. Look, they've done something brilliant here, which is they've taken, again, the business side of the sport. And the NBA does this too. The NBA, some of the NBA summer league ratings are really good, right? For what it is. They've taken the business side of it, the evaluation, the choosing of that player. And they said, you know what? Why don't you join in with us? And you don't have to be an NFL GM to like this stuff. You don't have to be a scout to enjoy this. You can be just a fit. Come on in. Here's an accessibility that we're giving you.
I don't know if this is prime time worthy, though.
I don't either. There's something weird about it's 8 o'clock on the East Coast and you're watching a 40 guys in underwear doing 40-yard dashes. It's weird.
I mean, I guess maybe we'll watch American Ninja Warrior.
Sure,
but these guys aren't future millionaires. I guess
right.
It appeals to us, and they're doing weird things.
But the other thing is, the draft works because we know what the end result is, right? The Chiefs are on the clock, and they take Patrick Mahomes that one year, and you go, oh, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes, this is crazy. But you're processing that, right? Whether you're a Chiefs fan or not, you know that there's an end result here. They've moved up to take a quarterback that's getting a C grade by everybody. This could be disastrous, and it turns into a Super Bowl championship. We don't know. The average NFL fan doesn't really know what to do with these numbers.
With these guys, we don't even know who they are.
Right. Most of the time, we don't know who they are. Exactly.
Even for guys like you and I, we'll start seeing names and be like, what team did he play for again? I'm glad they put that info there because I don't remember this guy at all.
Yeah. I mean, if Chase Young was there, and I'm glad he's not because he's going to be like the number two overall pick. But let's say he was there just to do it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't gain or lose anything of Chase Young, regardless of any result. You're already impressed with what he's done at Ohio State. You're not going to be less impressed if he fails the cone drill or whatever it is. It's a weird thing, but it is the way the NFL says, come on into the party. Everyone's invited.